John 16:5. But now I am going to him who sent me, and none of you asks me, where are you going? But because I have said these things to you, sorrow has filled your heart. Nevertheless, I tell you the truth. It is to your advantage that I go away. For if I do not go away, the Helper will not come to you. But if I go, I will send him to you. And when he comes, he will convict the world concerning sin and righteousness and judgment. Concerning sin, because they do not believe in me. Concerning righteousness, because I go to the Father and you will see me no longer. Concerning judgment, because the ruler of this world is judged. I still have many things to say to you, but you cannot bear them now. When the Spirit of truth comes, he will guide you into all the truth. For he will not speak on his own authority, but whatever he hears, he will speak, and he will declare to you the things that are to come. He will glorify me, for he will take what is mine and declare it to you. All that the Father has is mine. Therefore I said, he will take what is mine and declare it to you. As I mentioned last week, we got the news that the world will hate us. This is not a problem. Today in this passage, Jesus shows us how to relate to the world. He makes a connection between this reality that the world hates us and what it looks like to walk in love to that very world that hates you. We have resources beyond what we could ask for or what we could imagine. And they're right here in this passage. It begins with Jesus' declaration that he goes so the Spirit can come. He says, but I am going to him who sent me, and none of you ask, where are you going? But because I have said these things to you, sorrow filled your heart. Nevertheless, I tell you, it is to your advantage that I go away. For if I do not go away, the Helper will not come to you. But if I go, I will send him to you. So Jesus goes so the Spirit can come. He's going now to the one who sent him. Now he says, no one ask where I am going. And if you've been paying attention, that's a little bit confusing. Because we will find in 13:36 that Peter, I think, asked. In 14:31, someone else asked. So two times people have said, where are you going? How can we know where you're going? And he says, no one asks where I'm going. Now that's a problem to be solved. There's some theories put forward, but the one that makes the most sense to me is Jesus is addressing their heart rather than their words, okay? Now let's see how this works. When they say, where are you going, they're focusing on the going, because him going anywhere means he's not going to be with us, and that scares me. because he's talking about going in a painful way, and that means painful things for me, and I am worried about his departure. He is going. So while their words said, "We don't know where you are going," they were saying, "We're concerned you're going." When Jesus says, "You have not asked where I am going," he is focusing more on the where. You see, if they were concerned about him, that's what they would ask. But because people are people, these men were self-absorbed people. And they were concerned about how is it going to affect me. So Jesus, in declaring that you're not asking, is saying, you are self-absorbed. You don't seem to be concerned about my joy of being reunited with my Father. You don't seem to be concerned about the hardship of where I'm going next. Yes, I'm leaving you, but I am going to the cross by myself. And you're not concerned about where I'm going. You're only concerned that I'm leaving you. He then says, but your heart is full of sorrow because I tell you this. And why is their heart full of sorrow? Because they are self-absorbed, looking only at how it's going to affect them. Jesus then says, okay, self-absorbed lot that you are. Nevertheless, I tell you the truth, it is to your advantage. Now you see, this is the beautiful, crazy part of it. When they're self-absorbed, worrying about their self, they miss the promise. It turns out that what Jesus is going to do, where Jesus is going, and what happens because of that is completely to their advantage. If they truly knew how to be selfish, they would be concerned about that. Because it's to their advantage. It's good for them. But in their selfishness, they can't see that. They're simply concerned about themselves. So Jesus delivers this rebuke with a beautiful nevertheless attached to it. Because he's saying, not even your self-absorption can interrupt what I intend to do for you. And I'm telling you, it is to your advantage that I go. Because if I don't go away, the Helper will not come to you. But if I go, I will send him to you. And you need this helper. He will do more for you than you can ask or imagine. And that's why it's to your advantage. So the first third here is about the necessity of the cross, his destination to a reunion with his Father, and the amazing benefit that is to the believer. And then Jesus tells us more about this helper. Now, if you remember, he has to go to that cross. And that very cross becomes the subject matter. The word isn't there in our text, but it becomes the subject matter of the Spirit's activity. Let's look at how this works. But if I go, I will send him to you. And now I'm in verse 8. And when he comes, he will convict the world concerning sin and righteousness and judgment. So the first thing he does when he comes is he convicts. Jesus gives us three categories where this conviction comes. He's going to convict concerning sin, he's going to convict concerning righteousness, and he's going to convict concerning judgment. And that's just a little bit confusing. But Jesus lays out for us what he means. The first category that we see in verse 9 is that he convicts concerning sin because they do not believe in me. Okay, so his explanation of convicting regarding sin is because who? This is they, but we know from the context that it's the world, because this is the world is who he is convicting. So he's convicting the world regarding sin. Because they don't believe in me. What he means by that is he will convict the lost person that the lost person is sinful. And the lost person is in his sin because he doesn't believe in Jesus. Because apart from Jesus, we are left in our sin. So the first thing the Spirit does is he approaches and communicates to the world, to the lost world, that people are in a state of sin. And just like at Kids Club, the way the Spirit does that is on the I level. I am a sinner. Why? Because I don't believe in Jesus. I mean, everyone is a sinner. Those who don't receive what Jesus has done for them remain in their sin. So that's the first thing. He convicts regarding sin because they don't believe in me, Jesus says. Then the next aspect is concerning righteousness. So he convicts concerning righteousness in verse 10, because I go to the Father and you see me no longer. The idea is that the Spirit will convict the world of the quality of the righteousness possessed by the world. Okay? Because everyone grabs hold of a life preserver called righteousness. Okay? I spent many years talking to many, many college students. And when I talk to them in rural Missouri, and when I talk to them in inner city Chicago, and when I talked to them in Southern California, and when I talked to them in Hungary, and when I talked to them in Mexico, and when I talked to them in St. Louis, every person who is of the world grabs hold of their righteousness and they declare it's good enough. Had a Mormon missionary tell me, it's all about doing as well as you can. And I said, you really do as well as you can. Because I know me. I know that part of me is a lazy streak. I've noticed it in everyone else too. I said, dude, I don't believe you. I don't believe you've done as good as you can. You may or may not have done better than me, but you didn't do as good as you can. And he agreed. And so we got done talking. He said, well, I guess what I'm saying is everybody just needs to do as well as they do. And at that point, I'm like, you know, you realize we're not saying anything here. Everyone does as well as they do, and they cling to as well as they do, as though it's their righteousness. And it is. It's the only righteousness they have. And they hope that's worth something. Now, what the Holy Spirit does, he convicts concerning sin first, but then he convicts concerning righteousness, and he shows the deficiency of the person's righteousness. And how does he do that? Well, he has a picture of true righteousness. And true righteousness is with the Father in heaven, sitting at his side. And even though our natural eyes can't see him, the Spirit uses him to show the deficiency of human righteousness. That's what the passage really said, if we read it right. And concerning righteousness, because I go to the Father, and you will see me no longer. Okay? Now, the next aspect is concerning judgment. Verse 11 says, concerning judgment, because the ruler of this world is judged. Okay, the idea is that the world's judgment is broken. See, if you're here today, you have a judger. We're born with it. I heard the story last night about a two-year-old who was sent to time out in the quarter, and she declared to her mother, "You are destroying my destiny. You are crushing my future because you've set me in this chair in the corner." Well, that's fantastic because it illustrates just how broken all of our judgers are. So the problem isn't that we don't have one. Oh, I can make moral assessments all day long, and so can you, and you do. And in our flesh, they're broken. They're completely broken. But I hope you're catching that we have very good news here. The Holy Spirit comes to convict regarding sin. He comes to convict regarding this inadequate righteousness. And he comes to convict regarding our broken judger concerning judgment. You see, the lost person's assessments are not reliable. And you know what? When you or I walk in our flesh, we join the lost person in the world in an unreliable assessment. Or we have a broken judger. Good is called evil. Evil is called good. That's what our world does. Not every time, but there's no reliability because there's so many examples of evil being called good while good is being called evil. So we need to be convinced that it's broken. And you see, the ultimate source of the bad judgment is Satan. The ruler of this world? The ruler of this world. For a second there, my mind jumped to the ruler of the air. I said, I don't think that's what it says here. Here it says, the ruler of this world, who is Satan. And the ruler of this world is judged. His broken judger has been judged. So you see, God has the right to correct our perceptions of sin. God has the right to correct our perceptions of righteousness. God has the right to correct our perceptions of judgment. He does all of this. So when we look at this and put all of this part together, this middle part of the passage, we can see that we do not interface with the world alone. We don't go by ourselves to interface with the world that hates us. We do not communicate the gospel alone. When we open our mouths, when we display our lives, when the good news goes forward, we don't do it alone. The Spirit is active. He is convicting. You see, when you will open your mouth to tell your friend, to tell your family member, the good news, the Spirit is active. He is convicting regarding sin. He is convicting regarding righteousness. He is convicting regarding judgment. He is the one doing the heavy lifting. Talk about the hard part of seeing a heart changed. The Spirit is the one that's doing all of the hard part. We are participating in our weakness. And it's just the way it's supposed to be. We participate in our weakness while He convicts in His strength. And the amazing part is both our weakness and His strength glorify Jesus. It's more than you could ask or imagine. If we can open our mouths realizing this is true, telling someone the gospel will never be the same again, because He's doing the hard part and we're doing the easy part, and God is glorified by our weakness. So when the Spirit comes, He will convict the world. Next, when the Spirit comes, He will declare all truth, and He declares all truth primarily to the church. So He convicts the world, although sometimes He convicts the church, and He declares truth to the church, although sometimes that truth goes to the world. But the primary focus of one is the believer. The primary focus of the other is the unbeliever. Convicting the world, delivering truth to the church. This is what we find in verse 12. Jesus says, "I still have many things to say to you, but you cannot bear them now. When the Spirit of truth comes, He will guide you into all the truth. For He will not speak on His own authority, but whatever He hears, He will speak. And He will declare to you the things that are to come." We'll hold off the rest of that for just a second. But Jesus starts talking about Himself. He says, I still have many things to say to you, but you cannot bear them now. And when we hear, "but you cannot bear them," our minds probably jump to our sinfulness that keeps us from being able to understand. And there is some truth to that. But the bigger truth is that we are finite. That God created us to live in process. So we can only bear what we can bear today. And tomorrow's bearing, ability to bear, will come to a person that has been impacted by what was born yesterday. And so growth is possible over time, as we are instructed. I think I overheard that being talked about in the junior high Sunday school class today. And I was excited that such a similar idea was being taught. So that's still the case when Jesus says you cannot bear. Can't bear it all. Because learning, as I said, is a process. Receiving truth is a process. God has created us this way. It is the plan. The Spirit teaches this way. Okay. So Jesus says, I have more to say. It's more than you can bear. And then in verse 13, it's the Spirit who's in focus, the Spirit of truth. When the Spirit of truth comes, he will guide you in all truth, for he will not speak on his own authority, but whatever he hears, he will speak, and he will declare to you the things that are to come. So he will guide into all truth. He will declare to you the things that are to come. The truth and the encouragement, the good future that God has. And an awful lot of that activity with the Spirit happened as he was partnering with weak people to produce the New Testament.